Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
And from the border of liberty and prosperity and the highway to the north, it's Safety Wars. Sorry, we got on the air a little bit late tonight. We are doing this show remotely, and you are only getting an audio broadcast today. Hope everybody is doing well out there. What an exciting day. Anyway, I had a very productive day today. I'm having conversations with people out there and everything. And the advantage of a lot of the shows, and a lot of the, right, we have a lot of podcasters here on the Safety FM network, and or whatever you want to do. Maybe you're not on the Safety FM network, you're not listening there, you're tuning into individuals, and the thing is, it's organization. That's what I have to say. It's all about organization. How do you right? So you're like, well, Jim, well, what do you mean? I was having a conversation with a guy yesterday at one of my meetings here, and you know, we were meeting for a brunch, I guess we would call it. Not coffee, not lunch, brunch. And we were talking about human organizational performance. I was presenting it to him, and I had it on a nice little computer there and everything. And he said, this sounds like something that I've been doing all my life. And I said, yeah, welcome to the club. I know a lot of organizations out there, there's a lot of different organizations, different workforces, different what have you, where that's, you know, they don't send you the continuing education. They start breaking out that darn safety triangle or pyramid. They start going behavior-based safety on you. And that's what they've known forever. They've known behavior-based safety literally forever. So can you really fault them for, no, what's that? That's their default is behavior-based safety. And, well, this is what safety is. And what we're going to do is most accidents, most incidents are caused from unsafe acts. So therefore, if we can eliminate unsafe acts, therefore we're going to have a safer workplace. And therefore, if we why are they our darn employees working unsafely? And this is usually the way it goes. Is why are we doing it unsafely? Well, maybe there's an incentive in place for us, whether it could be verbal, nonverbal, it could be from outside work, inside work, it could be from everything. There's an incentive to do the job the way it is. It's either because you were shown to do the job this way, someone showed you how to do this job, you had to figure out the job, you had to read an instruction manual or a SOP that nobody's ever, people in the field haven't done that work. I'm sorry, people in the office haven't done that work, or they've done it a long time ago. All that stuff goes into everything here, you know, with everything on how people act. I mean, if you don't know any better and you're going to rely on a book of rules to do things without any rhyme or reason or explanation and or anything else, how responsible are you for that outcome? Maybe not too much, right? Most remember, the workforce, not professionals. They're there. They're being paid by the hour. Even if they are professionals, they're being paid by something. There's some type of, no, either by the hour, by the piece, by the project, what have you. And they're going to try, and what the idea when you're in business is to do things as quick as you can with the least amount of aggravation as you can muster, you can have, get the job done, and then go and do the next task. It's not, the incentive out there is not, how do I do this safely so I don't get hurt? That's not the first thing. That may be incorporated into, okay, how do I do this job? And let's make sure I don't get hurt. And maybe that's the first time that you're doing the job or whatever, and you're in that rules mode that we talk about. And, okay, we're going to figure this out, blah, 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 blah. And then you figure it out, and then you go on and on. You think about it one way, that's setting up the job. You think about it one time, that's setting up the job. You're not going to be thinking about safety every, no, if you're me, you are, but the average person isn't going to be doing that. So this is what you have, you know, human organizational performance. What are we talking about? We're talking about what's the context, what's the job, how do we set up the job to make it easy, how do we get into the high familiarity, low attention span for that? Let's, quote unquote, make this so there really can't be any mistakes here. And by that, I don't mean going out and getting a book of rules and go, well, yeah, step one this, step one do that. That's not going to work. You got to design that area for what your worker is doing. Design it around the worker. You get a little bit of ergonomics philosophy thrown in here. So what my point is this. A lot of us are already doing human organizational performance and don't realize it. Right? Have you felt uneasy about blaming the worker for everything? If you felt uneasy about that and you're trying to manage it somewhere else, another way, like maybe getting to know the job, getting to know the worker, getting to know, appropriately getting to know, right, in the context of the working environment. And everything else that's going in there, assessing the hazards with the worker, with people who are knowledgeable, getting the impact, trying to get buy-in from the worker. So, yeah, then we're going to do this, and no, we're going to buy this in. And by the way, you explain to your overseer, your boss, your supervisor, the owner, look, in the long run, our point is to, one, generate more information so you could then, once we have more information, then we're going to go and we're going to work safer because we're going to apply what we learned. Maybe we call it a learning team. Maybe we don't. We're going to apply that to your organization and how work is done. And we're going to figure things out and make things safer. And we're all going to be one big happy family here. We're not going to be against each other. We're going to be working with each other. And that's all the whole thing. People say, well, Jim, you yell, you scream, and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, okay. I get a little bit passionate about the way I work, about this program and everything else. But what's our intention? Our intention is to not hurt the employer, not to hurt the employee, more importantly. World peace, that's what we're trying to. We're trying to, you know, when I do international news and politics. So the message I hope I'm coming across is, we got to get along. We got to work together. Right? Like Rodney King said, can't we all just get along? Right? Well, during the LA riots back there. Can't we all just get along? We got to get along here. Otherwise, they're not going to make it as a country, as a people, as a society, as a world here. I'm dealing with some stuff I'll be able to talk about in the very distant future this week with some situations. But basically, this whole thing is getting way out of hand in this country with the war in the Middle East with Israel and Palestine. And that's pretty much impacting. I'm hearing people and their workplaces getting getting into discussions and arguments that probably shouldn't be happening in the workplace on these issues. And then people taking it out on, you know, whatever. Well, you're an anti-Semite. Well, you're anti-war. You're anti-Palestinian. And then it goes on and on and on. I've had a couple of those situations in the last couple of weeks. Now look in the community I live in. I live in Rockland County, New York, and there's protests going on all the time in Clarkstown, the town that I live in. Here every weekend, there's been a protest for the last year. And that's basically where I want to go here. And we're going to go to our first commercial break here, and we're going to come back. We might be doing the video. We might not. I have to see how it goes.
"32 years of lessons learned, that is what Jim Posel of Safety Wars has. He has had a front row seat for over 3 decades to the world of workplace safety and health. He's seen the good, the bad, and everything in between. And let me tell you, he's had a wild ride. Now, he's not here to preach or point fingers. Here is some hard-earned practical wisdom he has earned over the years. This isn't about textbooks or regulations, it's about real-world experience, the kind you get from getting your hands dirty in the trenches. So buckle up, grab a wrench, and get ready for Jim Posel's top 10 lessons from 32 years in HSE. Let's do this. Define the dang job. Look, before you even think about safety, you gotta know what you're responsible for. What are your duties? What's your authority? Get it in writing, in black and white, in your employment contract. Can you hire? Can you fire? Can you discipline someone? Can you implement change? Knowing this stuff is crucial. It protects you legally, plain and simple. It's like having the right tool for the job. You can't fix a leaky pipe with a hammer. And hey, if you gotta step outside your lane to help somebody out, do it. But know your boundaries first. It's about covering your backside and doing the right thing. Document and report, no exceptions. Let me tell you something. If someone tells you not to do your job, especially if it involves safety, you document it. Write it down, send an email, whatever it takes. And if it's serious, report it. Especially if it's coming from someone higher up the food chain. Remember, even a written order doesn't absolve you of your responsibilities, and a written one can't be negated by a verbal one. Safety first, always. And if they try to retaliate, well, OSHA's got your back with those whistleblower protections. This ain't about being a snitch, it's about protecting yourself and your coworkers. Documentation is your friend, folks, remember that. Don't sweat the small stuff, find the humor. Look, this job can be stressful, no doubt about it, but you gotta find a way to laugh, to not take yourself too seriously. A little humor goes a long way in easing tensions and building relationships. Some people get so wound up, so focused on the rules that they forget to be human. Don't be that guy. Crack a joke, share a laugh. It'll make the tough days a little easier. And when you can laugh at yourself, it makes it a lot harder for others to get under your skin. Now, before you go off on a crusade, ask yourself this. Is this my business? If it's not, walk away. If it is, ask yourself why. Are you the right person to address it? Do you have a constructive approach? Sometimes the best thing you can do is stay out of it. Don't go looking for trouble. It'll find you soon enough. But when it's your time to step up, do it with purpose and a plan. Let's be real clear. If an organization doesn't value human life, they sure as heck won't value worker safety. No matter how hard you try, it's like trying to teach a pig to sing. It's a waste of your time and it annoys the pig. People first, always. That's the bottom line. If a company's not on board with that, you might want to start looking for a new gig. It has been said before, and it bears repeating. If a company's breaking OSHA regulations, chances are they're breaking other employment laws too. It's like a roach motel. You find one, you know there's a whole family hiding nearby. Be thorough, be vigilant. Don't let them get away with cutting corners. OSHA's there for a reason to protect workers. Use it. Kill 'em with kindness. You know, sometimes non-compliance ain't about malice. It's about wrong training, wrong directions, and being told the wrong thing by so-called experts. People just don't know any better or have perverse incentive structures. That's where you come in. Work with them. They are the experts in their jobs and know how to get the job done. Treat them with respect. You are more likely to have a safer work environment working together. Explain why safety standards are important and work with them to make the workplace safer. Antagonizing rarely works. Shaming, blaming, retraining, pain for pain. None of this works and makes the workplace more unsafe. Whatever you do, do it with respect, with kindness, and understanding. You catch more flies with honey than vinegar, right? Don't come in guns blazing. You'll just put them on the defensive. Be a teacher, a mentor, a colleague, a friend, not a tyrant. Look, nobody likes to be called out in front of their peers. It just breeds resentment and hostility. If you gotta have a difficult conversation with someone, do it privately and document it. Always document it. It protects you and keeps them accountable. Remember, this ain't about throwing anyone under the bus. It's about addressing issues head on and finding solutions. Do it the right way, with respect and discretion. This line of work can beat you down, no doubt, but you gotta find a way to stay positive, to keep your chin up, not just for your own sanity, but for your career too. A positive attitude is contagious. It rubs off on people. And you know what? It drives the negative Nancys, especially the psychopathic types, absolutely crazy. So smile, be optimistic, and watch the naysayers squirm. This one's simple. If someone's acting foolish and is out of control with routine yelling, screaming, intimidation, and just acting like an idiot, document it. Workplace violence is never okay, and it's your responsibility to report it. Create a culture where people feel safe speaking up, where they know they'll be heard. And if someone's struggling, offer support. Remember, mental health is just as important as physical health. Let's look out for each other. Look, these are some of the things that I learned from Jim. He has shared some hard-won lessons with us. He has learned them for over 32 years in the trenches. And if there's one thing he wants you to do with all this, make a difference. Speak up for those who can't, fight for what's right, and never, ever compromise on safety. Go out there, be the change you want to see, and make the world a safer place, one workplace at a time. And remember, one man can make a difference. Where can you get this and many other lessons? It's on Safety Wars, available on your favorite podcast platform and on video platforms like YouTube under Safety Wars. You can always go to safetywars.com. He is also on Jay Allen's Safety FM network at safetyfm.com. He also offers safety training in a variety of subjects like OSHA outreach classes, 10 or 30 hour, Haswelper, and many others. Give him a call at 845-269-5772 or Jim at safetywars.com.
Okay, we are back. I was able to make the transition from working remotely into our normal broadcast setting here, just the way things worked out here. Hold on.
From the front lines of the safety war, it's Safety Wars, with your host, Jim Posel on Safety FM. Get ready to face the harsh reality.
Okay, so we are on the streamers here. They're waiting to kick in, and everything else, we're still on Safety FM. A lot of stuff has happened this week with in the world of safety. So we talk about, OSHA. That's our main focus here. That's been our main focus since March 2021, but we also talk about safety in our society there. Now, everything going on in our society, safety. Now, you're going to say, well, what do you mean? Consider this. Everybody, no, and we have had all of this stuff going on here with crime, right? Now, we always, when you think about safety, you think about disasters, crime, things of that nature. The automatic default isn't necessarily OSHA. It isn't workplace safety. Very, very rarely does that happen. So crime is what's important, what comes to people's minds, their physical safety, their communities. Crime impacts everyone, right, on everything. So no big surprise, this is going to be part of any campaign here. So here we have, and this comes out here, right? This is from MSN, CBS News. Here, a story by Laura Doan. I'm going to read parts of this here for us, not in its entirety, but you can go and check it out. So here, Harris states, violent crime is down. Trump says it's up. Here's a fact check. On the campaign trail, former President Donald Trump has repeatedly claimed that violent crime has skyrocketed since 2020. Vice President Kamala Harris has claimed that violent crime has declined to a near 50-year low. Both of them are correct. How's that? It all depends on how you want to look at it. Both candidates are citing different federal statistics that measure violent crime. Trump cites a Justice Department survey, while Harris cites FBI data on crimes reported by police departments. I'm going to say this. Both, meaning the two of them, both sets of data, especially the FBI data on crime, my understanding is that it's totally self-serving. Things do not get reported. So politics gets into this. Well, you're going to say, well, what do you mean, Jim? You're a police chief. You're a sheriff. You're whatever. Involved in law enforcement. You're a Leo, right? Law enforcement officer. Do you want to portray to the public that you are doing your job, right? And hey, things are great. Look, no crime. We're doing our job. Or do you want to say, look, crime is out of hand. We need more resources. And more resources, and what goes up? More resources means more money, higher taxes, and everything else. Do you want to do that? Or, or the first thing where, hey, everything's going wonderful, blah, 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 blah. Now, the second thing is this. So you're going to be reporting things, you're self-reporting this stuff with both of these things, right? I know, on this. It's going to be turn out what's the incentive to be self-serving. If you say, look, crime is it's a hellish experience out there. It's sort of like human and organizational performance, HOP, right? It's the same thing. Your boss is going to go nuts. The supervisor is going to go nuts with bad news. Isn't necessarily going to, work out so well. So when the police department, I'm not saying anything against it, I'm just saying human nature, is to report that things are good, things are down. So Harris cites FBI data and crimes reported by police departments. Totally self-serving, right? What's in the, I've done some research on that. So that is FBI's Uniform Crime Report. Harris strikes that. It tracks crimes reported to police by participating enforcement agencies. With Trump's, with the National Crime Victim Service, right? That is based on reports from the police department. Again, different focus. If you're going to be reporting this, it serves two different purposes here. Again, garbage in, garbage out. So the one that Trump cites, the National Crime Victim Survey by the Department of Justice, right, it found that the rate of violent crime offenses defined as sexual assault, robbery, aggravated assault, but not including homicide, was 37% higher in 2023 than in 2020. Right, 2020, last year of Trump, 2023, current last year of Biden-Harris, that we have data on. Right, crime researchers say the survey findings are valuable because they can capture some of the instances of crimes that often go unreported to police. All right, but the surveys' violent crime estimates exclude murders and are limited by a margin of error. Right, according to Jeff Asher, a crime data analyst. All right. What research shows about crime? Now we move to the other one. Experts more commonly refer to FBI's Uniform Crime Report, which tracks crimes reported to police by participating law enforcement agencies. Means that not everybody participates. Right? How much? I don't know. I don't have that data. According to that FBI, the rate of violent crimes, I'm reading what it says, as defined as rape, robbery, aggravated assault, and homicide, was around 6% lower. So it's a more comprehensive thing, but now we're dealing with reported by police, right, with this. One is not necessarily reported by police. It's, no, so Trump's claim is based on surveys, right, of regular people. Now you're mixed up. So with Trump, it's a asking a sample of people about crime. With the other one, it's what's going into the part by participating police departments. So one's from the public, one's from the police, right? So again, it's perception, more or less. According to the FBI's Uniform Crime Report, now we have police. That's self-serving, police reporting things. With the other one, you have people reporting it. Guess what? That has an incentive. Because I tell you what, my time in politics, perception is reality. And that's often what it is. People perceive it's unsafe. They're going to say it's unsafe. They're going to say that blah, blah, blah. Unreliable. The other one, the unreliability, are the police who have political aspirations, are impacted by politics. Are they reporting everything? Not necessarily right. True. I know back Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, in years past, has underreported stuff here. Maybe it's in their interest to overreport things. Why? I'm sure there's money involved. So what I'm saying is none of this stuff is fully reliable. You have to look at what things are, people's perceptions. With that, I don't know. It's just very, very frustrating. The whole thing is just frustrating. The fact that, and I'm going to ask this one question. Is there an analog that we have here? That's what I'm looking for. Is there an analog where for every one reported crime that 17 occur, or for every 20 reported crimes, only 5 occur? I don't know with that. I know in early 2000s, there was one coyote in South Jersey, right, in the Pine Barrens, and all of a sudden, everybody reported the same coyote again and again and again, and they ended up having a coyote hunt. And guess how many coyotes they found? One. Is this like the same thing with people reporting the same crime over and over again with things? You know, it's the old telephone game. So I would think that Harris's report probably is a little bit more accurate because it's you're dealing with fewer inputs here, right, from different organizations versus the Trump one here. But again, it's what people are doing. Are people over-reporting crime on one? Right? Not because there are cities out there where they said, well, we're not going to investigate certain crimes. We don't have the resources. We don't have the time. We don't have the manpower. We don't have any of this stuff. And then you have it, I don't know. It's all discombobulated. My opinion and what all of the data shows on both surveys is crime is on the decline since the 1990s, probably because of the crime bill of the 1990s, which has proven to be very controversial over the years. A lot of criticism on that. So we're going to go into OSHA news here, and let's do a share screen because we're, it's non-copyrighted. Oops. Reason why we're using this, it's a little bit old school, is that I don't get an echo like this. I have an issue with an echo. So here we have OSHA news releases from October 2024. All right, this week. We had two of them this week so far on yesterday. By the way, thank you, everybody, for the birthday wishes here yesterday. Department of Labor cites a Georgia tire company, $271,000 in penalties and fines 15 safety violations in the wake of a 57-year-old worker's fatality. Federal safety inspectors found a tire manufacturing facility with a history of safety and health violations could have prevented The fatal injuries sustained by a 57-year-old maintenance worker. And let me add, everybody is innocent until proven guilty. Things get litigated, vacated, negotiated, and every other kind of aided. And when this stuff goes to trial or however it's managed with this, formal conferences, informal conferences. So none of this is final. Here is just proposed. OSHA cited the tire company after investigation of the company bypassed safety procedures meant to prevent machinery from accidentally starting during maintenance. This is also called lockout tagout. The company relied on basic on-off controls and sensors instead of following proper safety procedures. As a result, the company was cited for one repeat, 12 serious, and two other than serious violations. The company was also cited for repeatedly failing to train authorized employees in safety performance servicing and maintenance activities. The company has repeatedly failed to protect its employees, and this time that negligence resulted in a preventable tragedy, said OSHA Area Director Joshua Turner in Atlanta. Wow. So Atlanta also covers Ohio. Wow. Okay. Every year, thousands of these incidents occur, causing serious and sometimes fatal injuries. And let's see, machine guarding, caught in between hazards. Missing guardrails, uncovered holes, fall hazards, all this stuff. And according to the press release, this company has a substantial history of noncompliance. Company located in Macon is a Chinese-Korean-owned tire manufacturer that employs approximately 560 workers from both Korea and the U.S. The facility has been operation in the U.S. since 2016. So, we don't normally see this here, at least in the press releases. I'm sure it happens. Where we have a company that's basically managed by the Chinese Workers' Party, Chinese Communist Party, and it's also hooked into a Korean, it's not saying North or South Korean company that's manufacturing in the United States. If you're doing business in China and you're a Chinese-owned company, you're basically in league with the Chinese Communist Party. And for them to be cracking down on this, I'm a little surprised, to be honest with you. And believe me, I believe, like everybody else, I believe that workers everywhere, not like everybody else, workers everywhere have a right to a safe and healthful workplace, regardless of where they are. But you'd be surprised the number of people who don't believe that. We had more than one situation where we had... African Americans are disproportionately at risk at work for a whole bunch of stuff. Just look at the statistics when they break them down. Same thing with Latinx or Latina individuals. People are like, I've already encountered, you know, what do I care? And it's like, you want to just say, you're a freaking racist. Happens multiple times. And I said to one guy that kept on harboring on this again and again and again. I mean, this is recently. I said to him, they have a right to vote. Well, what do you mean they have a... I said, African Americans have a right to vote in this. Did you know that? And by the way, they also are allowed to sit at the same lunch counter you sit at. Well, what do you mean? I'm just telling you, they have, right? And by the way, they also have a right to a safe and healthful workplace. Right? The guy didn't like that very much. He wasn't a customer of mine, but my customer was there and was laughing. He said, man, nobody ever said that to him. I said, yeah, I'm sure nobody ever said that to him. I said, and the other thing is, you're placing yourself in an extremely high liability having an individual here, not only not following OSHA regulations, safe practices, and everything else, but also you can't be saying stuff like that. You won't want to believe it. I'm not going to worry about people's beliefs The fact of the matter is, do you act on them, and do you manage your people that way? I'm not going to get into what people think. I'm worried about what they do. Thinking I can't really control. Can't really do. So here you have citation one, item one. This is a walking working surfaces thing. 4 feet or more, right? They had a hole. 4 feet or no deeper, right? Stepping through any hole that is less than 4 foot deep above a lower level. The employer fails to ensure effective measures to prevent tripping and thermal burn hazards as demonstrated on or about May 18th. And basically, this would be not only the fall, but it will also be additional hazards after the fall. 11,524. Citation one, item two, no guardrails around a process. 11,524. Citation one, item 3A, serious. Procedures were not... this is a lockout tag app. No procedures, not followed. Procedures not followed. Citation one, item 3B, this was $0. Established procedure for the application of energy control did not cover the actions listed in and was not done in sequence. Citation one, item 4A, procedures, procedures are not developed, documented, or utilized. They got them for the maximum here. For lockout tag app. Citation one, item 4B, the established procedures for the application of energy control did not cover actions listed and done in sequence. $0. Citation one, item 5A, procedures are not developed, documented, and utilized for control of potentially hazardous energy when employees are engaged in activities covered by this section. Again, I don't know. 16,131. This one was for zero. The established procedures for the application of energy control did not cover the actions listed in and was not done in sequence. And procedures are not utilized for the control, again, for the control of potentially hazardous energy when employees are engaged in activities covered by this section. 16,131. Citation one. Item 6B, lockout and tagout devices are not affixed to each energy isolating device by authorized employees. No dollars on that one. And the energy control procedures did not clearly and specifically outline the scope, purpose, authorization, rules, and techniques to be utilized for the control of hazardous energy, including but not limited to items in this section 11,524. Citation one, item eight, one or more, how much is this for? 11,524, one or more methods of machine guarding was not provided to protect the operator and other employees, right? 11,524, citation one, item one, this is a big one, this is a repeat, no training, 161,310. Citation 3, item 1, other than serious, physical hazards were not marked in yellow and to designate caution. That was $0. Citation 3, item 2, lockout devices and tagout devices were not singularly identified, and lockout devices were utilized for purposes other than controlling energy. So in other words, you have a lock, and you use that lock for locking up your toolbox as well as lockout tagout. $0. For a grand total of $271,930 in penalties. Now, let me share with you here. My family, I come from a family of tradespeople. With my three siblings and my father, tool and die maker, my brother John. Both of them rest in peace. I went to the cemetery today. Tool and die maker and machinist. My other brother works for a school system doing maintenance work. And my other brother is retired. And he was doing work. He was in the military. He was an aircraft mechanic. And outside the military, he did a lot of warehouse work, which has a lot of different hazards people don't even realize. I worked with him for 3 years. Now, Let's talk about this stuff here. Why is this relevant? Why am I bringing this up? All of them have elements of lockout tagout. All four elements of lockout tagout. My father and my brother John told me one of the worst things, and especially my father, he had PTSD over this for a while, was a guy, this is before OSHA, a guy got his fingers cut off in a press and a machine shop. Guy screamed for hours and hours and hours and hours about this. They got, you know, because, again, getting the people out, and then they had to get his hand out. They had to do this. They had to do that. You know, by the time they got out, got the guy to the hospital, it was like 2 hours. Again, no procedures. And I'm not blaming the EMTs or anything. That's the way it was. This is what happened. Screaming. And he said my father couldn't get the sound out of his head for months afterwards. My brother John, similar thing, where he had things all locked out, tagged down, and someone cut all the locks and turned things on because they were in a hurry. My brother Eric didn't share with me any stories, but I know there are stories that he has with lockout tag out in his career, inside and outside the school system. My brother, who's retired, he always talked about in the military foreign object elimination with everything. Tool control, right? Tool control. It was tool control with the machinery and with the aircraft engines or the aircraft, everything. It's like a surgeon. Everything had to be accounted for at the end of the activity. So nothing's left in there. And you also had to have a lot of other stuff going on there. This is what I'm going into. Now, the problem that I see with lockout tagout is this. Our favorite hierarchy of controls, right? That you know the inverted triangle here, right? Hierarchy of controls. Let's do a share screen on that. Bear with me. Let me get that up. This is what the problem I see that's inherent with lockout tagout. And it's the one that nobody ever wants to discuss. Why? I have no idea. Let's see if we could zoom in a little bit more. Nobody ever wants to discuss this, but this is what the reality is. It is rules-based. Well, what do you mean, Jim, rules-based? And it's also an administrative control. So as we get further down on this hierarchy of controls here, you got PPE at the bottom. The idea is that PPE is the least reliable means of control of a hazard, protecting yourself. For a whole host of reasons we discussed, this is the least reliable. You got to rely on the employee 100%, right equipment. Equipment's working right and everything else, you know, it's appropriate. Very difficult. Now, administrative controls, a little bit more preferable than PPE, but what is the problem? This is where lockout tagout leave exists, is in administrative controls. If you have a very laborious lockout tagout process, a lot of machines that we use today in manufacturing have been designed in the 80s and 90s. I mean, you buy a machine and that's it. Multiple lockout tagout areas. We have to do this. 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 Well, guess what? 5 or 6 different locks, and I've seen that in some manufacturing facilities, 5 or 6 different locks. What are your chances of all the rules being followed all the time? Not very good. In the oil industry, I've seen multiple locks right here. There's 6 or 7 lockouts, and you have a gang box, and you're relying on the operators to lock out the right stuff, and you are making sure that you lock out the right lockout tagout box, the gang box. I've seen how many times you think I've seen that get mixed up. You're relying on these administrative controls and people making decisions. That is the least reliable method of doing anything. So why are we surprised that we have issues every facility I go into, I consult on with lockout tagout? The other issue that you have to consider is this. Who wrote the plan? Because, with me, when I get a lockout tagout drop, I hire somebody, even if I have to subcontract it out, who is an expert in lockout tagout. And if you're doing high voltage, I get an expert in NFPA 70E on the electrical end with that. Why is that? The reason being is they will not, workers will not go, and consult with someone like me because I'm not an electrician. Most of these, lockout tagout covers a lot of stuff. Water piping, pipelines, any type of energy, hydraulic. But usually it's electrical that it covers, right? An electrical component. The worker who is the expert, the electrician, normally does not trust the safety professional, like me, to write things for this. They feel, right, every company I've been to in 32 years, that an electrician should be writing it. And the other thing is this, if it's a union shop, now you're dealing with a gray area where a non-union person is writing the procedure. Is that non-union person, the safety professional, taking a job away from the union guy? Could work outside electric also. That's an issue that you have to consider here. That's why when you see the lockout tagouts, inadequate procedures and everything else, that might be an issue there, because were they written appropriately? You say, well, yeah, you would think that the employer or the employee would be interested in their own safety. And it's not that they're not interested in their own safety. What it is they've learned to adapt, right? They're not malice or anything. They learn to adapt to work safely, and most of the time they work safely in this. And overwhelming majority of times, nothing ever happens. So they think that they're fine. Hey, we're rolling along. Now, what happens? Other people get involved. You get safety professionals. They're like the donuts and coffee safety professionals. We all know what that is if you're a longtime listener and everything. They don't know about their job. They don't know how to do that job. They don't know how to do a lockout tagout. Maybe you go and you're like, well, that's like the last thing on you say. Hey, Fred, are you doing a lockout tagout? Oh yeah, good. Okay, we're gonna audit. Oh yeah, hey, Jim, here's the lockout tag. You see, I locked out tagged out, and it says it on the list. We're great. And lo and behold, they might not have locked out and tagged that, and you don't know what you're looking at. Happened to me multiple times. That's why you got to dig into this and say, well, look, let's dig into this here. One lockout, and I'm going to share a story. One lockout tagout story. Always, when you go on break or lunch or you're leaving things overnight, always check those locks in the morning if you left them there overnight. Why? One of the jobs I was on, somebody went and cut all the locks to operate equipment and didn't tell anybody. Almost cost a $187 million, the Viking funeral. My daughter says hello to the world. Want to come on camera? She says no. But, it is what it is here. That's why you have problems with lockout tagout. That's why a learning team is very helpful in dealing with this. Because we exist. In this world of administrative controls, lockout tagout, where we really need to get into elimination, substitution, and engineering controls. You got to really include the worker with this stuff. Don't only do it a safety professional. Don't get your average safety professional. Make sure you get someone with that high voltage NFPA 70E or if it's a safety professional that's very familiar with electrical, and it doesn't matter. I say electrical, but it could be any process. Make sure, you're running in the middle person. This is like critical here that you get this right. One, save lives, and number two is prevent injuries, and number three is the fines with this. I can assure you the lockout tagout devices and the training is going to cost a hell of a lot less than what these people are paying for it. I can guarantee that. I can guarantee it. So let's go on back to what we were discussing with the OSHA website here. Again, everyone's innocent until proven guilty here on this. And let's do a share screen. Sooner or later with the other program, we'll figure this out here. Why I'm getting echo. So let's click on this one. OSHA trade release. And then we'll finish it up. The Department of Labor's OSHA today released expanded guidance for animal slaughtering and processing industry inspections, superseding previous guidance that applied only to poultry operations. The goal of the updated inspection guidance for animal slaughtering and process establishments is to significantly reduce injuries and illnesses that result from occupational hazards through a combination of an enforcement, compliance assistance, and outreach. Under the guidance, OSHA inspectors in these establishments will focus on hazards associated with sanitation and cleanup operations, ergonomics, hazardous energy, machine guarding, among others. My thinking on this, right, again, they're trying to protect the worker. It's OSHA. I'm not belaboring it. I'm not criticizing them. That's what they're meant to do. My question is, and I've heard murmurings throughout the news, some of the news that I've read, that when these, so you get one government person in there to do, because they have a situation, and there's one famous company out there that sells cold cuts, very high quality cold cuts, by the way, that had a listeria issue. And company and inspectors went in there to investigate, why are you having a listeria issue? And then they're finding OSHA violations, and then they reported to OSHA with that. And, that's why sanitation, right? A lot of these places may not be sanitary. I think we covered one story a number of years ago here where one of these places was infested with mold and they're processing food. So the expansion into the broader, this is an update. Under this new memorandum, all program and unprogrammed inspection and a NAICS, and they call that the NAICS, 3116, shall cover the focus hazards. That's specifically for this type of industry, your NAICS code, right? Shall cover the focus hazards associated with the list below in accordance with the Field Operation Manual, FOM. Sanitation and cleanup operations, ergonomics and skeletal, musculoskeletal disorders, PPE, and specifically the payment for PPE, lockout, tagout, which you just discussed, machine guarding, slip strips and falls, process safety management, specifically ammonia, and chemical hazards such as ammonia, chlorine, hydrogen peroxide, peracetic acid, I've never heard of that one, I'm not familiar with it, carbon dioxide, and nitrogen. Probably what it has to do with disinfectant and slaughtering, and specifically carbon dioxide often is used. I know lab animals, I think it might be here, unless they're doing stuff with dry ice. That could be dry ice here. Parasitic acid sounds like a disinfectant. I'm taking a wild guess there. And nitrogen, gas and liquid. Probably has to do with refrigeration, putting things into a deep freeze. Probably what it is, chemical hazards. Occupational noise, egress and blocked exits, and record keeping. These focus hazards shall be addressed in addition to other hazards. Now, if you have a family member in this industry, probably worth sending this over to them. Right off of the OSHA website news releases. If OSHA discovers information relating to possible violation of the laws and regulations enforced by the wage and hour division, OSHA and four offices are to provide timely information to the wage and hour division by making a referral, right? And between those two agencies and or government entities, I should say, and all workers, regardless of their socioeconomic or immigration status, have the right to a safe and right to a workplace that's free of known safety and health hazards, and to report hazards to OSHA without fear of retaliation. OSHA shall make referrals to whistleblower staff when indicated. And it goes on and on and on with this, and accident rates and everything else. Very interesting stuff here with that. I mean, I will spend a whole program on just these documents here, because I tell you, this is actually pretty comprehensive here. So that's what I have here for us. And let me point out, the other day I made my commentary. Who is looking out for you? When you're going out talking about these political candidates, and we had a debate last night locally, that's what my question is. Who's looking out for you? Often what we hear is, well, you got to look out for yourself and only yourself. Not the way it is. We're a society. We hire government and employees. We hire people to help protect us, to be our representatives. If they're not doing their job, that's a problem. If you don't think that they have a plan to do their job, that's a problem, regardless of political party. On the local level, it gets very important because, like they say, all politics is local, all government is local. I'm a big believer in federalism, meaning everything gets devolved down to the states and local municipalities to work, to handle and to manage no matter what. And this is what I look for. Who's looking out for me? Or are they looking out for themselves? I don't know. Your question, that's something for you to answer when you get to that voting booth in less than 3 weeks. Yay! All right, I've got to put in a little bit of a applause there. Do-do-do. Where's my applause? I should have this up and running. Here. All right, less than 3 weeks to go with the applause. And we're going to go to our normal patriotic music at the end of this, and we're going to fire up the American flag here. See you tomorrow.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.